Hey everybody, welcome back to No Killing Goblins. I'm Oshi and I'm here with Dragoness.
Yay.
Okay, we repeated the names. Oh god, I screwed up the intro, didn't I? It's supposed to be you saying Dragoness.
It hardly matters. I don't think we've ever had... At this point, I think if we got the intro right, that would be screwing it up.
Oh,
but yeah,
stop.
We are here today, back from our Christmas vacations, to talk about the very, very end of Volume 9.
I mean, yeah, I guess we are back from the... We were back from the Christmas vacation, and we did have quite a bit of... A little bit of a gap, because everybody was... Various people are on vacation, and things had to happen. How was New Year's?
Nice, quiet, happy.
Mine was boring. I know I chose the boring, but I feel like offended that I'm boring at New Year's. Don't ask, it's the whole thing. There's like no news item.
Well, there just hasn't been a ton of news really going on. A lot of stuff gets quiet over the holidays.
Well, wait. Pirate ABBA news, the first Gravesong book's coming to audio on April 30th, right? So the Gravesong book's coming out. It's nice. There's music, I guess.
Yeah, I'm excited. I think that it's going to be spectacular. I've been looking forward to hearing the audiobook version of it specifically for a while now.
Yeah. What else is there to news-wise? Oh, shit! Book news. There's been book news. I just don't know, like, did you hear about the Hugo thing?
God, there's always something fucking up with the Hugos nowadays.
No, but this one was, like, juicy as mother, like, fuck. So, for those who are not aware, the Hugo Awards are one of the more well-known of the science fiction and fantasy awards that are handed out. There's like World Fantasy Awards, Nebula Awards, all these other things. They're usually handled by these big committees, and there's a lot of like publishing houses behind them and people noted and things like that. Hugo's are a little strange because every year a different group gets to pick it, because the way the convention that runs the Hugo Awards works is that there's like an... Nobody is in charge of it. Instead, there are different cities that bid for it, different groups. And then whoever bids for it, if they win the bid, they get to host the convention and decide, based on a structure of rules, who gets to be on the list, who gets to nominate, vote. And pretty much anybody can, like, pay a fee and get to vote for the Hugo Awards.
Yeah.
Now, for a very long stretch of time, it was handled by essentially... Maybe not the same group of people, but influenced by the same group of, like, publishing houses and all those folks. And they were consistently the people publishing the science fiction fantasy for, like, 30 years. Like, Bane, the head of Bane Books, and the editors for, like, Del Rey and a bunch of other, like, science fiction fantasy people. So anyway. And they always put in, like, really particularly good pieces of science fiction fantasy. Ursula Le Guin got in there, Lois McBride-Fitzgerald. What's somebody more current? Shauna McGuire got one for Newsflesh, the zombie apocalypse one. So that made it, like, very consistently, it's one of those things that it also tends to be very American. But in the last decade or so, they've been branching out, and last year's was held in China.
Yeah.
In Chengdu. And they discovered the joy of the CCP because after the nominating convention was done and the awards were handed out, they're supposed to report back, and they did, and they gave some pretty disturbing news, which was a shock to nobody who has any practical sense, that they had to eliminate they disqualified a bunch of different novels. Because, without giving reason, but it was kind of obvious why, there was literally the book Babel, which is about China and the Chinese and British conflict during the first Poppy War. It's adapted from that. Immediately eliminated with no explanation given. Clearly one of the best, I think it was considered the best of the year. It won a bunch of other awards. but it was not, RF Kuang was just not in,
I missed it
even allowed.
entirely. I'm not familiar with the book, but I would believe that China would absolutely tank him. That's hardly a surprise.
The, I mean, it living, this is one of the things that I thought was like, maybe it's unfair to say it, maybe people are not like this, but if you're gonna have an award show that's international and you're going to allow people like to who are in an international situation to vote for things, they have to work within the structure of what's allowed locally.
Bullshit.
So no, they literally, people will go to jail, so they
Yeah,
can't actually
so
do
they just
that.
shouldn't have had it in China. It's that simple. If China doesn't want to play ball, China doesn't get to have the Hugos.
Well, that's true. That is very true. But if you're accepting the bid for it, and it does happen in China, then you gotta live with what that means. Once you've done it, that's the point. Like, if you want to do it, if you want to bitch about it afterwards, or say we're not gonna do it in China again, sure, free country of the United States, you're allowed to do what you want. But China's not a free country. It doesn't work that way. I don't know. That it just felt like a lot of like shocking censorship from China of all places.
Well, there are a lot of people for whom hearing China commit censorship is a shock.
I'm always just like, why the fuck would you even do that? But anyway, there was a lot of controversy over it, back and forth. There were statements from various people, like John Scalzi made one. It was funny to watch, but it was also very much a safe topic. For once, there were no, like, there were losers, but there were also no losers. I don't know what else happened in January.
I wouldn't know. I kind of avoid the news nowadays.
This is book news is news?
I mean, there hasn't been a lot of book news that I've seen.
There has to have been something that happened.
It's always quiet this time of year.
Is it?
I mean,
I don't know. Like,
unless you want to talk about the fucking state of Sanderson, but every time I say that guy's name out loud, you throw up the cross and start fucking hissing at me, so.
don't make me do it. Also, it wouldn't be the cross. It would be the gay. No, never mind. We're not
The
gonna
gay
insult the
cross, yeah,
Christian.
whatever.
Yeah.
It's a turn of fucking phrase.
RuPaul's symbol.
RuPaul cross.
With a drag queen in big hair straight in front
Anyways, like in personal book news, apparent the second that I mentioned this when I talked with our producer Kalara the other day, she immediately knew who this person was. Like Leigh Bardugo, whatever. I guess she did whatever that newest Netflix series I didn't watch, the like something and bone, Skull and Bone.
I have. Wait, Lea Bardot?
That might be it, yeah.
Is are you talking about? Wait, that doesn't sound right. Are you talking about what Skull and Bones?
Or not Skull and Bone. It was some that like listen, I don't know. I started reading a book of hers and Kylara immediately recognized who this person was. And
Oh, you mean the Grishaverse writer, Lea Bardugo? The one who wrote the Shadow and Bone trilogy.
Shadow
That's
and
the one.
Bone, that's it. Yeah, I didn't read those.
Yeah.
But I got recommended The Ninth House and I've been reading that. Or listening to it on audiobook, actually. The first one blew my fucking pants off. My face melted off. It was just that good. And I'm partway through the second one now.
She's an excellent writer. I did. I mean, I now. Like, I'm not a. I didn't get sucked into the Grishaverse, but she is an excellent, excellent writer. I will admit. I freely would say reading one of her books is worth it, if only because she's fun to read. I'm not a young adult. By the way, the Grishaverse novels are probably great. They're just young adult, and I'm in a period of my life where I'm going, like, I've not done enough reading about children. I don't want to read about children having sex. I just can't do that
I
anymore.
like young adult stuff sometimes. This is absolutely not fucking young adult. Like
Oh,
ninth,
no, absolutely
yeah,
not.
Ninth House is more urban fantasy noir. And honestly, if nothing else, I appreciate that when writing it, she understands noir and why those are different mystery stories from the more Victorian classical stuff, right? It's not about being brilliant. Too many noir stories I read want their protagonist to be brilliant. No, it's about being determined, being able to get up after being punched in the face and just get to the end. To just chew on the problem until the problem fucking breaks.
You know what it is? It kind of dips into, it's not dark academia, but it dips into the dark fantasy stuff.
Yeah, it's urban fantasy.
Yeah, it would be urban fantasy, but I wonder, I don't know how to say this, but there's a lot of like tropes and things that got pulled out of urban fantasy or and are now in these like subgenres of fantasy called like dark academia and stuff. That this is what it is. Like, there's also this kind of like, it's not urban fantasy the way people thought about it in the 90s and early aughts. It's more like it's more like gritty. It's the way people thought about like you were saying, it's noir. It's like the rebirth of noir, but in a very like millennials are writing about noir because we live in a new gilded age kind of deal.
It has a lot of like the same energy as the very early Dresden Files books, but better because like
Yes,
she's just a better author than Jim Butcher is, or at least was at like a similar point in time. So it has a lot of that same energy of a person who knows a little magic, dealing with magical problems and solving a murder and getting punched in the face. But
but it's also very much like dark academic because it's set in Yale. It's Yale.
Yeah, it's about the secret societies of Yale and how they actually do know magic, and the main character is from completely outside that system and completely outside just any of the normal systems of it. And like the male lead for like for about half the book, Darlington, is also really great. It's a good book. I'd recommend it. I did not want to get caught up on it for too long, because
No, we're fine. Look, we actually have so little to talk about, we barely crossed the 10-minute mark.
yeah, but there was something else I wanted to talk about that matters to truly nobody but me. But I finally got my Hitbox controller.
Hitbox?
Yeah, it is a leverless arcade fighting stick controller, like you would use for fighting games, but it doesn't have a like lever. It's just got four analog buttons for up, down, left, and right. I've wanted one for years, and I finally bought myself one as a Christmas present. Just in time for the new Undernight game and the new Granblue game, really. That's it for news. Like, I do not have an exciting life. That's the most exciting thing to happen to me, other than the blizzard and like forever.
Oh yeah, okay. Like I don't want to talk about my personal life. That's I'm literally trying very hard to avoid part of my personal life. What I'm doing a lot of and ah, and that's not a good thing to be doing. Honestly, like I know what I should be talking about, but I'm avoiding it.
We'll talk about it then.
Ugh, you're okay.
Listen, it's either that, or if we want to talk about more news, we can talk about Vince McMahon turning out to be a monster.
Oh, everybody. Oh, do you notice that thanks to the New York State, like, giving that window of, like, we'll let you charge people again? So many people have been found out to be, harassers and.
We already knew that he was a shitbag, but the stuff that's being talked about, as far as I know, happened very recently, like as early as 2021. Some of it was still going on, right? So this isn't like a long dead thing coming to life. And we always knew he was the kind of scumbag who would clean a dead wrestler up off the ring and then continue a pay-per-view. But there's a difference between, I don't know, it's hard for me to put this. That's heartless. But some of the stuff he's accused of makes me wonder if he's not just a fucking creature walking in human flesh. And I'm not watching the Royal Rumble right now because I'm fucking done with the WWE.
I don't know what to tell you, but wrestling has always been one of those things where it's not even, they don't really hide it that well. Things are fucked up behind the scenes. They just always happen. But I'm not gonna get into, that's not what I really want to talk about. You know what I wanted to talk about? The Mean Girls movie came out.
I still need
the
to
Mean
see it.
Girl. Look, it's a musical. I know it's not the Mean Girls that I know and love and have made a piece of my tiny, tiny piece of my personality, but it's Mean Girls. It's Mean Girls, a musical on movie, and it's good. It was good. That's all I have to say. It was very like they were trying to be relevant just a little bit too much, but the music was good and I enjoyed it and it was a fun experience to watch. Now, but that doesn't mean I actually went to the movies to watch it, but I did watch it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to watching it. I'm hoping that this does well so I can finally get Heathers the Musical as a movie adaptation.
That's never gonna happen. The generation that would have loved that is already dying.
Everybody would love a Heathers the Musical adaptation. The only people who wouldn't
Lie.
just haven't heard that soundtrack yet.
Oh, absolutely. But the thing is, they never get movie musical adaptations right because movie musicals, or sorry, musicals are too earnest, and you can't put that onto camera unless you do like a stage adaptation the way they did it for Hamilton, where they just did the stage adaptation and then just recorded the whole thing. That was fantastic.
I think that that's a little bit too reductionist. I think that there's a lot of reasons, more than just that they're too earnest. I think that a bigger problem is that too many directors don't really understand how to convert the medium, earnestness aside. And that's why, excuse me, that's why most stuff like Cats would have been better animated. But it's neither here nor there. Heathers is down to earth enough and lacking enough in
What the fuck do you mean Heathers is down to earth?
Oh no,
Do
hear
you
me out, hear me out, hear me out,
remember?
hear me out. It was originally a movie, and I think that as a result, its plot does not quite have that same difficult fantasticalness to try and convert back into film.
I mean, it's pretty fucking dark.
Oh
I
yeah,
just
it's
think it's not
really
like.
fucking dark.
I mean, it's. Everybody ends up. Wait, does everybody end up dead? No, she doesn't end up dead.
Yeah, a bunch of people wind up dead, but not everybody.
I was. I mean, the fact that the musical omitted the whole, like, my son eats. I know it's a 50-year-old movie? It's a 40-year-old movie now? But damn.
Or was it
You know what I want
1990,
to.
1989?
You know what
So
I want
like
to
20,
see?
30?
You know what I want to see, but will never get made because I don't think it's something that Gen Z or Gen Alpha will be particularly interested in, is like an election type movie. Do you remember the one with Reese Witherspoon and what was his face? The guy who was all over all the movies and American Pie and stuff. What is his name? I always
I'm
forget. I thought he was so hot for a little while there, and then I grew up and realized, nope. Well, he's still handsome, but he's not like,
I know the guy you're fucking talking about, but
He played the doofus. Anyway, the election movie was just like, it's such an on point kind of. I know it's completely niche, but they remade fucking Hocus Pocus. They could remake that.
it was a sequel more than a remake, but
Okay, be honest. Nobody who watches the Hocus Pocus 2. Okay, there are only two groups of people who watch Hocus Pocus 2. The people who've already watched Hocus Pocus 1, and the people who have no idea what the fuck is happening and are just watching it on Halloween.
yes, they're. You realize that you have just described literally the entire human race, right, Oshi?
Yes, all because the entire human race should be watching Hocus Pocus.
Yeah, because it's a
Just
fucking
remember.
timeless classic.
Yes, it is.
Anyways, I think that we have covered a gamut of weird
Wait, wait,
things.
wait, wait,
Oh.
wait, 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 wait. What one last thing did happen in January? The next. I will talk about this because, as gay as I am, I have to, and I know you don't worry. One of us has to, and it'll be me. RuPaul's Drag Race started a new season. 16 years!
Oh, I didn't realize a new season started. I thought that was next month.
Yeah. No, this is when they do it. January to like May or March until they do the next one. Big thing. The reason I'm mentioning it isn't because the new season started. It's because I wanted to mention the fact that like this is something that's so niche to like a subgroup of people. And over the years, it's slowly built up to a point where it's now relatively mainstream. People know about it, at least tangentially, right? And it's nice to sometimes remember that it did happen. Struggles and all, it did happen. People do remember. And it's been 20, sorry, I just got a Discord message. Anyway, what was I saying? Fuck me.
RuPaul's Drag Race, long, slow climb, struggle, mainstream
Right, right.
relevance.
Right. Mainstream relevance. And it's a good reminder, and it's a nice thing because I know the parallels aren't the same, but the wandering in will achieve global domination the
One
same way
day.
RuPaul has one day.
Although,
And
God,
segue right into
I was about to say, on
it.
the subject of RuPaul's Drag Race, the year before last, when the Drag Queen Christmas was coming through town.
Oh, did you see? So you saw,
Well, hold on, let me finish the story. Because I wasn't initially not planning to go just because I didn't feel like going out and buying tickets and sitting. I'm certain it would have been fine, but I just didn't have fucking in me to leave the house. And then I realized that my boss at the time, who worked in politics, was aggressively like doing some behind the scenes campaigning to try and get them banned because it was going to be, all the usual fucking buzzwords, degeneracy, not for children, blah 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 blah. Tried
As
to
if
get
they
the
wanted children
yeah,
there.
tried to get the theme. Well, it's the fucking Christmas show, and it's basically the RuPaul's Drag Race runner-up fucking Christmas tour. It's all tame jokes and funny humor, and it's nothing. It's literally nothing. It's a fucking variety act like every other variety act that comes through on a holiday. And I got so mad I went to go watch it twice.
That's a I will say that that wasn't actually the one I was thinking of. So there is a variety act done by Jinx Monsoon and Ben De La Creme that is truly excellent. It's on Hulu, and it's a Christmas, like they did a Christmas thing. It's raunchy and insane, and it involves a bunch of people. It's essentially a variety. It was like a vaudeville performance, like every drag
Yeah,
show
vaudeville
can
lives
be.
on in drag.
Yeah, that's the way it is. It's a bunch of clowns on a fucking stage acting crazy. They don't want children there. They're just trying to get drunks to laugh and enjoy themselves. That's literally all that's happening most of the time. And it's just like every other club scene or comedy scene or any kind of play or variety show that ever happens. It just never makes sense to me whatsoever why people even bother caring that much. Like, you're not
Because
gonna see it.
everybody feels like they have invisible points to score so they can win. I don't know what it is they think they're winning or who that is that they think is keeping
We
score.
don't okay, let's act let's this is a politically neutral most of the time
Well, okay,
show, so
we're both gay as fucking Sunday. We're politically neutral unless you come after the drag queens. Then we stop being neutral.
yeah, let's just leave it at that. But I was trying to segue into the Wandering Inn, and today's subject will be chapter 9.70, the last chapter of volume 9, and the epilogue together. Yay! Volume 9 is over and done with.
And oh God, there's so much of it. But I'll be honest, for all that there was a lot going on and like events and just action scenes, I feel like this is actually a really easy chapter to boil down and talk about.
Honestly, yes. And we're not going to cover all the nitty-gritty and all of the particular twists and turns that happen. They're just it's a quite a bit of like a cinematic experience happening during this chapter. And if you and I hopefully you've read it before you do this, do listen to us. But I will go over like we'll go over what we wanted to, like the big subject matters both all the two of us wanted to. Do you want to start off with Rabbit Eater so we have something like goblin-y and positive to go from?
I mean, yeah, Rabbit Eater had like the singular positive upswing in this entire goddamn arc.
Yes, that's all I have to say about this. Rabbit Eater.
I mean, so we Rabbit Eater has always been sort of sitting in this place where, despite being my favorite character, he's always felt like he's right on like the he's right on the button. He's on the line between being like a real central important main character and just a prominent side character. Like, you know, the Hallrock and the fucking Horns are all very important characters, but Griffin Hunt are very much important side characters, and the Horns are all main characters. Do you see where I'm kind of trying to draw my line here? This is where I feel like Rabbit Eater has really fucking transitioned to, yes, I'm hoping we get more of him. He is main character important, like getting more word count time. I need more word count. I need more Rabbit Eater. I love his plot here, though. It's an opportunity for him to really bring all of the stuff that's been going on to Randria full circle. Seraphel stands up for him. It's made clear that fucking everybody he knows already knows, pretty much. And they all stand up for him, and even fucking the great enemies of goblins say, you know what? We actually have real enemies. I don't think this guy is our enemy right now. Until, you know, the Prince of Humanity actively pulls I'm fucking human rank on them and starts compelling people to keep attacking, but.
Okay, that was the thrust of it, but for me, what was important about the whole Rabbit Eater setup was that he is like quickly becoming something, because we're gonna actually, I'm gonna mix and match from the epilogue here a little bit. So the when we come back to Rabbit Eater and the Porcelain 5, 9, whatever the fuck number
Porcelain
is.
five, well,
Yeah,
four
the Porcelain
now,
five,
but
yeah, Porcelain 4, what happens is that we get the hints of both Bad Arrow and not and Rabbit Eater being possible, potential, definitely, maybe being Goblin Lords, right? And
Rabbit Eater more than most, but yeah.
yeah, but the hint is both of them, right? That they both are close to or could become Goblin Lords. And the hint given in the epilogue and by the appearance of Ray Death is that there's actually three. I expected Bad Arrow, I expected Rabbit Eater. What I didn't expect was the indication that our favoritist shaman would also be included in that number.
Yeah, I'll be honest, from what we've seen of them, I can see it for Ulvama. She's wily, she's been around forever, but also I don't see it for Ulvama because it's almost like she's decidedly happy to be a background character. She wants to be the second in command. She wants to be more of a power behind things and not like the key decision maker.
But there's nothing that says that a Goblin Lord can't be that, because we did see the shaman who runs the Goblin Island.
Yeah, but I don't know, something about it felt different. And honestly, I just don't feel like I know Bad Arrow enough to have a real opinion about it. He is, to this day, outside of the people who haven't made it this far, and even actually people who did, I still think Head Scratcher feels more developed than him, despite being alive for several million more words.
Honestly, I would say that, but I think it's a deliberate simplicity to his character.
Yeah.
He's actually got what a lot of them want. He has a happy partner. He has a position in a place under rags that he appreciates and loves, and he doesn't have angst, and he isn't like wandering the world trying to fix things. He has what he wants. What makes him is the fact that he is steady, right? At least that's how I thought.
I see that, but that's also why it's kind of surprising that he could be, you know, a potential lord and be walking that path of the king. I imagine as we get to see more of him, it'll make more sense. And also, fucking Rabbit Eater got to kick the shit out of Great Ath and throw him off the ship. That was great. I
That
love
was
how
great.
Great Ath got it when he finally realized why he was being brought along. It's like, oh yeah, no, I'll take the dive here. Oh no, whatever shall I do? Ah, splash.
I do like the fact that he there is a very distinct moment where Pirate reveals something. I don't know how many people picked up on it, but there was that language king. Like he's speaking some kind of high goblin, and then it just turns into. I thought it was both hilarious and kind of telling. Like he has this complex thing. He talks about the magic, and there's this whole sequence where he describes in very a lyrical language about like assessing each enemy, and then like in like there's the translation into like low gothic or gala or sorry goblin was like, huh, mage. Tricky.
Yeah.
I
Although
thought that was fucking
I
hilarious.
did love Pirate slipping in the really blatant Fate reference with the giant flower shield, I'm not gonna lie.
Oh, God. You know what? You and your fate people can go fuck yourselves. I'm out of this. I'm out. I don't know why Pirate chose to do that, but it's like asking for like tempting fate, literally.
Yeah, I mean, we know Pirate's a weeb. We know Pirate likes fate stuff. And for all I know, it could just be a coincidence, and it could be something else. But I don't know. But anyways, no, Rabbit Eater was just a solid bright spot in a very deep, dark chapter. And because Rabbit Eater is my boy, I was incredibly happy to see him harness it and beat back the prince and. The goblin lived. What else can you say?
I think in general the goblins came out ahead here. They finally got evidence that I think the what was it the point that Erin was trying to make was that just once the goblin lives and to show she like cemented herself as the goblin friend and the whole like the people who benefit from it for once like it's the goblins.
Yeah. Even Great Ath, who has a very much, I've been here before, I've seen it all, I know what's going on, he was just a little bit in awe of Aaron.
Maybe
That
not.
she
I
actually
don't think
reached
it.
out and took his hand.
Maybe not awe, but I think he was like he noted it as something that's rare, and he acknowledged it. Even
Well,
he acknowledged
it
that it was
was that
something rare.
scene, or maybe it's more, I just remember that there was a moment around the same time that they're just getting to Rabbit Eater, and Rabbit Eater is fighting the prince, where it seemed like something that he had always wanted to happen, but had never quite happened before, with like the people choosing not to go after Rabbit and continue going to fight the pirates, and Erin and everything she brought to that. I don't know. It seems like something really special and just not the normal everyday thing happened here.
So the aspect that's emphasized here, and I think Pirate built here, is that Erin Solstice makes a actual choice. She could have gone back. She chose not to. She could have stopped things. She could have banished people. She could have done a lot of things differently, but she chose to do this way. And no, this is not the most optimal choice. It's not the best choice. This is actually possibly the most disastrous way to go about making her point, but it is a point that she can make, and she took the opportunity to do it, and that's all that mattered to her. And that has consequences that will play out, I think, for a long time. I mean, the death, like, just the fact that she did not go back and
She took it to the wall. She Erin, we have always seen, and I think the closest that it's ever come to a moment like this is Volume 5 with the White Flag, right? But that was an attainable victory, it felt like, even if it shouldn't have. With this, Erin walked into impossible odds with nothing, and she said, "I am taking this to the wall. I am going to keep going. I'm going to push with everything I have." And it's like all these situations with the Assassin's Guild, or dealing with the gangs in Selim, or all these places where she goes to throw her weight around and everything buckles. But this didn't fucking buckle, so she just kept pushing until she broke her enemies before her, cast the world into a world war, escalated things as far as they could go, and fucking scattered her enemies before you to hear the lamentations of their families.
That's certainly one interpretation of it. My interpretation was less generous. She
Oh.
certainly accomplished
I'm not
what she
saying this
wanted
is a
to
good
do.
thing. I want to make that clear. I'm not
Well,
saying
it's
that was
not
a good
about
thing.
I'm not making a value judgment on good or bad here. I'm glad she finally found whatever purpose she needs to make choices. I am just like it's like how do I how, I'm trying to find the right metaphor for it.
She
It's
sacrificed a lot.
like no, that it's not even the sacrifice thing. It's like imagine you ask you put two objects in front of someone. It not even two objects. Let's play like a spray of like chocolate in front of someone. They're all chocolate. They're all gonna taste like chocolate. And a person just has to pick one chocolate for themselves. And the person doesn't pick a chocolate, and they keep talking about it, and they keep thinking about it, and they keep deciding it. And while they're trying to decide, other people pick their chocolates, and the choices get taken away one by one until the choices that you're left with are probably the worst selection you get. And then you finally make a choice, but the one thing you choose is the thinnest chocolate, and inside is some kind of bitter melon that you hate.
I don't get it. Like, I understand, because you've been talking for a long time about Eren and the choice, and I kind of have agreed with it, but I feel like we're not really on the same page in, like, how we're feeling about it and the choice she made, I guess. Because I think this choice was inevitable, and it was always going to be this choice. It was just going to be this choice in some other moment.
Right, but this choice with less consequences.
I don't think that.
This cho No, that's what I'm contending with. If you make the choice on a smaller scale over and over again and you build the re the like you find the strength to be able to say that you're going to make this choice, if you're going to choose the goblins over your Antinian friends, if you're going to choose to save this one person over every obligation that you have and everyone else and abandon all your friends and draw them all into this horrific thing that's going to occur, but it's all because you choose to save this one person. And that is where your flag is going to go. Like, you choose that one person above everything else. And if they're your friend, if they're your guest, if they're the people that you value, then you will go save them, damn the consequences. And that is the choice that you're going to make, then there are a lot of ways you could have like done that 100 times before. That this inevitably would happen is not the part that I'm
Okay, so
like object.
I guess let me try and explain where I disagree here because I think you might have misunderstood me. I
Okay.
think that when she made that choice, it was always going to be like this. I think
No, I
that
understood.
I think that at the end of the day, the consequences were always going to be dire. The people that get pulled in were always going to get chewed up. It was always going to be this bad. It was just how long can she keep putting it off?
I don't agree. I think every moment that you put off the decision, you make what's already going to be a terrible thing even
Well,
worse.
it's not like she's never even done something like this before. Like what she did when she saved Heath and Samuel, when she called all of these people together against the Assassin's Guild, but she had the bigger stick. When she marched out with a white flag, desperate to stop that war, but with no idea how to do it other than to throw herself in and fucking pray, and she did it. It's not that she's never made these choices before, it's that she's never been willing to, or even been in the position where she's had to really take it all the way. Really, not since the Goblin Chieftain, where she burned herself almost to death just to kill that fucker with her. And this has
Yes.
always been deep and dark inside of her, but she's never had to make the decision to let that out. But the day she had to decide if she was letting that out or not again was always going to have to be this bad, or it wouldn't have been forced to make that decision in the first place.
I don't agree. I can't agree because there have been too many situations, too many chances, too many people who could have used this level of Aaron Solstice will step in and protect you. And she chose not to do it. She chose to stay in her inn. Now, were they a goblin? Were they a person? Like, how do I say this?
Okay, I'm gonna have to ask for specific examples here, because
I'm
when I think
trying to
about
get. I'm try. You gotta let me finish. I let you talk through the whole thing. You gotta let me get there, man. I got my own journey to go through when we do these discussions, and it takes me a little bit to like find the words. Okay. So I'm not trying to deny what you're saying. What I'm saying is, let's take Tessa for example. What makes Tessa less valuable than Rabbit Eater? Not even I can't use the word value. Value is the wrong word to use here. Why does Tessa not need her at the same level as Rabbit Eater? What makes Erin choose the people that she does over the ones that she doesn't? I cannot say this. It's difficult to articulate, but when you're willing to make those choices, when you're willing to say that these are the people that I am going to stand for, and these are the people that I am not going to stand for in by doing the same thing, then you have to shoulder the consequences that come with also not standing for those people that you choose not to. And those folks will suffer too. You can't be something for everybody. Yes, I agree. But during the whole of The Wandering Inn, Erin has always like stepped forward as this weird, whether she's done it herself, whether someone else has put her on the pedestal, she's been that beacon. And you know the one beacon that's like, oh my God, this person is not doing what the rest of the world is doing and throwing us away. She's been standing as the person that will save you. And I think of every like the Solstice Knight Antinium. I'm hoping I'm saying his name right. F Ebrium? Was that how you say his
Embrium,
name? Embrium.
I think. Hold on, let me double check this one.
I can't quite figure out how to say his name. I never have been able to, but he
Embrium?
got what he
Yeah.
Yes, and he came out, and then Anther. Like, the two of them came for her. She is. They're not quite as sure of her. And there's. But they're there. For whatever reason they are, they're there. And they were sacrificed to accomplish Aaron Solstice's goal. And she is making these choices at this incredibly high level. And then turning, like, she spent so much time saying that she didn't want to be making those choices while at the same time, from my perspective, making those choices. Step by step, choosing who would stay at her inn, who would not stay at her inn, who she would interact with, who she would not interact with, who was valuable and who was not valuable. She's not a saint. I'm not asking her to be a saint, but it hurt me that you could stand, like she could do that and then be able to say in the same breath that I don't want to be making these choices. And this is all me. I'm not asking you to agree with me. I'm not asking you to change your opinion or your view or to alter the way you see Aaron Solstice in any way. This is all me. And to have her come to 9.70 and go this far for Rabbit Eater, when she wouldn't go this far for so many other people that I felt like could have used her help. Salus could have used her help. She chose, like, what? She couldn't pull this kind of stuff off for Salus? For Oniva? She couldn't have done it?
When has Salus Oniva
No,
ever?
no. No one, when did Rabbit Eater ask her to come to the ship do all of this?
When did Salus or Niva ever need this?
Oh, so you need, did Rabbit Eater need this help?
Yes.
Because only in times of...
Okay.
I love, like...
No, you're twisting what I'm saying here. What I'm trying to say here is Erin has gone to bat for and helped Oniva out. She literally blackmailed and extorted all of the adventurers fleeing from the north just for alchemy supplies, specifically to give over, right?
She didn't do it for him. For her, excuse me. She didn't do it for Oniva. She did it because... of advantages that come from providing this to Oniva. Look,
okay,
I'm not going
that,
to...
I just realized I just got it. You're way more cynical than I am.
I am very much more cynical than you are. I'm trying to say, don't change your opinion. This is entirely my own point of view. Like, this is how I saw it. Like, if you're going to pretend to some... If you're going to... Not pretend... If you're going to represent something and then choose, like, the fact that Erin finally chose to be like, I represent this and do it, good. But the fact that she stood in that like, cagey space where she could be representing many different people, many different causes, and all sort of, like, not promising them anything while they all built up their hopes that she would pick them. That's the part that hurts me. She might have picked somebody else. She might have picked not the goblin. She might have picked the Antinium. She might have picked somebody else. But she gradually came to the decision, whether or not she wanted to, that the goblins needed her more and that she had to do it this way. Is she still the same Erin Soltis? Yes, she is. But she could have made that point and decision a long time ago and been an ally rather than a symbol of hope for a lot of people.
Okay.
And that felt like it affected me. And that's not something that a lot of people will understand or agree with, and I am perfectly fine with that. Maybe I'm seeing it differently, but it did affect me, and I wanted to talk about it.
I wanted to, more than anything else, just understand where the disconnect in our perceptions is, and I see it now. You have a way more cynical of Machiavellian view of how Erin acts than I do. And that's surprising, because I have a pretty cynical and Machiavellian view of how Erin acts sometimes. But
I think most people genuinely, like...
They buy into Erin's ooh, tee-hee-hee, what did I do this
time? Yes. I don't, because... If she's intelligent enough to recognize this, to be as sad, and so not even intelligent, self-aware enough to be as sad as she is, then she's perfectly aware of the consequences. Or at least aware enough to be sad about them. So that's how I know that maybe she, like, that's how I get the indication that she...
Yeah, I think that you just think that everything played out a lot more deliberately than she intended it, or I think she intended it to. But yeah, that's Erin's character arc in this in a nutshell. I will say, for specific highlight scenes for me, Erin telling the fucking literal Lucifer devils of House Hell, yeah, sorry, I know this deal sucks, but I don't know you well enough to be sad about it, and I really can't until I'm fucking done here. Oh my god, that was one of the most fucking cold-blooded things I think I've ever read.
I think that is very true. I think the second most cold-blooded thing that she did was the moment when she sliced open the Earther kid.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, no, it's just fucking... Everybody stops, there's a beat, they all realize they're from Earth, and then, one, I think Erin might have realized it from the beginning, and two, she fucking poured acid all over that hand.
I'm gonna repeat why I think this signals her being more, like, self-aware than... people give her credit for this. She knew they were from Earth, and she sliced the
Oh,
fuck out of
I
them.
don't see that as self-awareness. So that's kind of what I'm talking about when I say that deep within Eren lies an absolute monster, somebody who can turn off the part that says, or maybe not turn it off, but she can work out what needs to be done, and then she can set herself and that goblin chieftain on fire, and she won't hesitate until she won't hesitate, she'll just mourn after the fact. I don't see that as self-awareness as much as I see that as a deep and powerful ruthlessness.
Right, and there's a couple of writers I know. They all say basically the same thing. They talk about they're either ex-soldiers or like military service people or something like that. And a lot of like, and they all end up saying this statement that I never quite, I think it's whether it's true or not, I can't say, but it's certainly represented in fiction a lot, is that there are certain people who are capable of being what they consider warriors. They are able to, in a situation where conflict occurs, where death is common, where they can maintain a kind of keen intelligence, and without any kind of fear, without being controlled by adrenaline or any kind of like emotional stuff, be able to make cold, hard decisions. And that separates the sort of warriors from the people who are more like people can be trained to be soldiers, but they can't be trained to be warriors. And Aaron Solstice is that kind of like has that capability.
I'm familiar with the concept. Sometimes I think the whole warriors thing is dressing it up a bit, but yeah, no, there's like the people who are the lifers that can have a fucking combat rating and go out and go home and have a happy family and sleep at night because they're not sociopaths. They just do it.
They just do it. For them, it doesn't, they understand how, like, the
Yeah,
separation
and
between the
it's not
two.
even like they don't have issues or PTSD or any of those problems. It's just in the moment, they can just do it. And I have no idea how common that is. My understanding is that's a lot of what like boot camp and the training is supposed to do, is to drill that, is to drill out the parts of you that hesitate in those moments anyways and create that. But I didn't go, I wasn't in the military, and you know.
I've like spoken to a lot of ex-service members, read a lot, and my experience of that has been like, it's just, it's there. There has to be, because it's about survival. Like, militaries try to produce soldiers. Soldiers have to be able to like forget everything, follow the command, do the thing, and get
Be
through the other side.
professional.
That's right. And if they just have to be built so that they don't break before anyone, and then they try to find those people who are able to instinctually do it and hone that into a razor sharp thing. And if they're really good, they get turned into like bigger, like more, they get used more. I don't know if that's fair or not, but they do get used more.
But
Okay,
and God, we haven't
let's
even
move on
had
from that.
time to dig into, or we probably won't have time to dig into the horns. So I'll just say one thing about the horns. People say never
Sure.
meet your heroes. I say never live a life where if your heroes meet you, they're going to be compelled to kill you on sight.
Oh my God, yeah. There was that was so terrible.
And also, the Blood Tear Pirates are a pack of craven hypocrites.
Yes. That's all I have for that. We can talk a little bit about like what I thought was a common criticism, and I think I agree with, is that there could have been a little bit more development to get the for the like the affectations of the pirates, like why they were doing it, how it was supposed to influence them, and the separation between the more evil ones and the more desperate ones and all that. But
Yeah,
we don't really.
I've heard those arguments. Honestly, I felt like the Blood Tear Pirates as a concept have been around in the story for a while. We got a feel for them. We met a few with Saria. I got what I wanted out of it. I do have a prediction, though, if you're interested in it.
Oh, sure. Go ahead.
Okay, I can't remember his name, but the son of the Admiral, it was like Juipe or something. I think that the next time we see him or most other members of his species, they're going to be coming out of the ocean and they may have levels.
We'll see. We'll see. Now, I do want to talk about one last thing before we wrap up. It's mostly to do with the epilogue. We can't go over everything in the epilogue, other than the fact that I can't believe Bethel survived. I guess Pirate wants drama.
Oh, yeah. And I'm happy to know I'm not the only person that was deeply and surprisingly affected by Gershel, but really, we got to talk about the song.
Well, two things. The song and pirates, the fact that the system spoke to Erin and how that ended up with her levels.
Fucking
We'll get to that.
negotiated.
But yeah, the negotiation and the prelude to the negotiation. So the song is called Land's Farewell. It's a community-made song by a group of people. It's from Interlude Singing Ships. The message from the lead vocalist and the person who did the mix and lyrics is Pierre. Pierre says, "Hello, everyone. This is Land's Farewell, a community project led by myself to bring a song from the Wandering Inn to life. It's a simple tune set to leave her Johnny, but all the people who took part truly brought it to life. If you haven't read The Wandering Inn and still find this song, please go read it. It's literally free." It is a beautiful piece of music. I think it's fitting. It fits the tone of the singing ships thing. If you haven't listened to it, please go listen to it. I may request Kylara put the song somewhere. If we can get the permission to you put it in here, and you guys can listen to it here at the end of this episode.
Yep, and
Okay. Both.
it moved me to tears. It was magnificent.
Yeah, and before we wrap up, we're going to talk about the biggest and most important thing.
Rezga?
We are up the reminder that we are a RPG, the levels. So I do want to talk just a little bit about the way the grand design is, because I feel like people are not picking up on the fact that Volume 9 is about the grand design.
Yeah.
Like, I think folks are missing out on the fact that as much as it has been about Eren's return and all this bullshit happening, it's been about the grand design. It's about watching as the grand design, which was critically injured by the loss of all of those ghosts, which we find out was literally the thing that
Spare
the
processing
gnomes.
power, like.
Like the gnomes set it up to do what allowed it to grow was saving all of those souls and having all of that quote
Well,
unquote data and expanding itself to grow and become this thing that it is
I mean,
now.
that wasn't
It was.
exactly. I don't want to get into that. Anyways, go on, go on, go on.
Well, and that's okay. So my interpretation of it is that's how it happened. It grew because the gnomes left it a command to save the data, save those souls, save the data,
Well,
and then it started to actually see those, to process all that information and find patterns and find ways to improve itself. And over time, that's the basis of how it became what it is now versus what it was at the start, which is much more like simplistic and not very like not even aware. It wasn't even
yes,
partially aware,
but
right?
well, it was partially aware, but no, what they told it to save was its decisions. They told it to save all of its decisions and all of its thoughts so that as time goes on, it becomes more elaborate because it can
No.
iterate on its previous decisions.
Okay, I need to pause here. Like, what is the exact phrasing?
From Volume 9, Chapter 61-G. To quote, "This is what the gnomes wrote, at least in the common tongue, for they'd done it in the language of reality itself, the tongue of the gods. Save all decisions made." Just that. Oh, the nuance was far more complex. The grand design had been forced to partition itself to log a record of all its decisions and levels and more. It had accumulated as the last gnomes died or vanished. More and more decisions. Just numbers. Level 15 warrior reaches level 16. No skill assigned. Warrior slays dragon. Dragon slayer class assigned.
But as far as I understand it, that happened, and a lot of its decision making was saved through, like, tracking what it decides to do for each and every soul. And the loss of those souls, the shock of it at the end of volume 8, as the Cassigna 8 Cassignal essentially seriously damaged it, and it made desperate moves using Eren to, like, save itself and save what information it could, and then it was, like, lost and trying to figure out, how do I continue to function without all of this information that I no longer have access to? Am I supposed to function? How am I supposed to function? What am I supposed to do? What are these rules? All of that plays out in Volume 9. And the end result of Volume 9 isn't just Eren making a decision. It is the bargaining sequence between Eren Solstice and the grand design of Istakinis is not just about Eren Solstice. It's about the grand design doing the exact same thing that Eren did and making a fucking choice. It made a fucking choice. It made a choice to be what it is, and it defines itself. And in that moment, makes that skill for her. And it will, in the end, make something like that for everyone, if they ever get to that point. That's the decision it made. And it is such a fantastic journey to watch something that doesn't even exist find purpose and meaning and choice.
Yeah.
It is so profound.
And
yeah.
The thing about the grand design, it is, in every real and true sense, the god of the in-world. It is the deity that sits over everyone's shoulder and knows them truly and works to reward them for the decisions they made with only love and no judgment. Even when it judges you harshly and gives you red classes, it is just quantifying you for you and showing that it understands you and is in your corner. And watching that being grow and understand who and what it is meant to be in a way that is totally not what it was meant to be. I love when
I'm going to say, wait, hang on. The red class thing, you know that Pirates written this before. Red classes are not, like, bad. They're just ones that come with the cost.
Yeah. But generally speaking, they're kind of bad. Like, I understand. That's the thing, though. They're not meant to be bad, but they're kind of fucking bad.
Like, I don't know. I mean, like, the raid, I'd give in to the raid skill if it got me. Okay, anyway. We're not going to talk about it. Keep moving. Keep going.
Like, and also, as somebody who's always had aspirations of trying to do, more specifically, like, tabletop game design, and has made a lot of homebrew, and has even taken, like, a couple cracks at converting different stories I like into systems. Like, right now I'm working on a Hong Kong action theater hack for the Carousel story, which is something that I'm excited to try and actually finish for once. I love seeing the struggles that the grand design has with game design and how much it's okay to change the rules when you're ultimately, it makes the rules. It just doesn't realize it yet.
And even within that context, it choosing to say that, no, the rules cannot be changed even by itself in some cases. In some ways, and that yes, it is not fair for, like, the divine beings to be able to whisper things to their followers. Like, it closed so many, it made so many decisions that, whether it's fair or not, it balanced things in a way, and it learned that making those choices, balancing things, is part of its task.
Yeah, I mean, it took, what, 10,000 years for the first balance patch, and then it came up with another one, like, a week
within
later?
Yeah, exactly. And that, I think that's what was the, like, turning point for the grand design, because it makes those choices and it announces its presence and its active hand. And in the process, it does what it has always been doing without ever saying anything to all of them. There is someone, there is a, not kind, I don't want to say kind, there is always someone in the corner. For even if you're, I have to say this, even if you're a terrible warmonger, even if you're a pirate who's killed thousands and is wreaking bloody vengeance, if you beg it, if you make a fair deal, if you make a fair offer, there is someone listening and there is someone who will respond and who, and you saw it, literally, you saw.
Who will hear you out and be on your side.
Exactly. And you saw it. It gave, and my voice is breaking, and not out of emotions, I'm just like breaking. The Admiral was the first person who got to do it. And it learned that behavior partially because of Aaron Solstice, but it wasn't just Aaron. It's making these choices, and you got to see that Aaron and the Earthers and all that stuff. Anyway, point being, at the end of this volume, we get that back and forth where Aaron is, who doesn't even know what she wants. Kel Surprise, she's back to not knowing what the fuck she wants. She gets all of these choices, and I loved, Pirate was totally trolling us, right? Like, everything was pirate trolling us.
Yeah, no, a few of these were definitely pirate trolling people, but in, like, a fun, this is what people thought was gonna happen, but no, we're going weirder. We're going wilder. We're going crazier. We're going way really fucking confusing.
The door to Earth opens is still, like,
fun. Yeah, and honestly, the thing about that one is I got the impression that the grand design wasn't even certain how it was going to pull that one fucking off.
I have no... And then there, the whole In the Bridge of Lands, Talos Donathel, that one just, like, blew my mind. There is another, like, in, like, wrapped around subdimension that connects everything?
There,
on top of the whole Crossroads of Israel shit,
yeah,
there is another place?
It seems like it's actually the kind of thing that used to be pretty common. Like, think about that one shop with many entrances all over the continent.
I cannot imagine how, like, if you tried to take apart Inworld, how, like, if you shook
how
it,
many layers
how many things would... yeah, exactly. And then...
Honestly... I had personally expected something involving a ship where, like, a ship and in by any other name was something I was personally expecting. And I got trolled real hard right off the bat.
I do appreciate that Pirate slipped in amongst the granting of her new box of incontinuity. It's too long for me to repeat here. She did get, like, the Key of Insights to the Pavilion of Secrets. So she does have the ability to, like, know about, like, all the things that she wasn't allowed to know about before because she had skills.
Yeah.
So that's fun.
It's going to be really interesting. And you know what? Just to sort of cap everything off before we go, I will say the full name because I think it needs to be said.
Fine.
The transient, ephemeral, fleeting vault of the mortal world. The evanescent safe of passing moments. The faded chest of then and them. The box of incontinuity. I need to know.
Okay, good it's night, a box! There's probably dicks in it. You know what, it's though? I think the box. Key moment... the key moment out of all of this, I think that... probably gets passed over a lot is that her level 50 class is the Wandering Innkeeper.
Yeah, it was inevitable.
All these years, all these, like, speculations, all these epic things, she's the Wandering Innkeeper. She always has been, always will be.
And I'm betting aspect of the Wandering Inn is going to mean that she's going to be able to just take a building she's in fucking over.
I hope so. I would like to see her do something. I'd like to see, like, I mean, she's a Ferrelling size now, so let's just hope she doesn't fuck Nears, because no. That's too creepy.
Okay, no, listen, the reason she's a Ferrelling is because when they meet, every possible barrier needs to be removed, because this is the one romance, the one thing that has been built up this entire distance of this story, And if it turns into a thing where there's a size difference and it can never launch, that's going to lead to bad feelings. If I don't think they're going to work out myself, but I think that you have to set it up so they have a fair chance so that it feels like that arc is paid off.
I don't know what's gonna happen, and to be honest, like I said, I'm still like reeling from the kind of damage Eren did to my soul in Volume 9. I'm just holding out hope that whatever does happen, I get some hot dudes that are not fairly sized.
I mean, we're in Balaros. She'll probably meet Luan.
Care about Luan. I want some hot man-on-man action. Where's my man-on-man action?
I don't
There's
know.
all a
Luan's
lot of
married.
girl freaking Magnolia held hands with Ressa, but I can't get man-on-man. Fuck, the closest I could get was a dragon and a unicorn fighting in a fucking corner.
I mean, jousting horns, right?
Oh, okay. But on that note, bye
Bye,
everybody.
everybody. Reska is the new best character in Wandering Inn. Good night.
I slipped off deck and there I drown. Now I'll never leave her. I left land to be born at sea, and now I'll never leave her. I will never leave her.
Oh, I will never leave her. For the waves took me and I changed down deep. Now I can never leave her.
I gave one eye into the deep.
Now I'll never leave her.
I breathe water now when I sleep.
And now I'll never leave her.
I will never leave her.
Oh, I will never leave her. For the waves took me and I changed down deep. Now I can never leave her.
My family wept upon the sand.
I wish that I could leave her.
I left half my heart on the land.
Yet I will never leave her.
I will never leave her.
Oh, I will never leave her. For the waves took me and I changed down deep. Now I can never leave her.
My soul will ne'er rise from below.
I shall never leave her.
As I walk on land, half sinks below.
And I shall never leave her.
I will never leave her.
Oh, I will never leave her. For the waves took me and I changed down deep. Now I can never leave her.
You've been listening to No Killing Goblins.
Edited by Liquid Ender.
The music on No Killing Goblins was composed by System Glitch. They can be found at youtube.com/systemglitch. You can get in touch with us via our Twitter at No Killing Goblin or email us at nokillinggoblins with an S at gmail.com.